Support also comes from the Bank of Cashton, an independent community bank since 1899, working to improve our community by giving time, energy, and financial support to community organizations and efforts like WDRT. Bankofcashton.com for more information.
Support for WDRT comes from Ethos Green Power, a worker-owned cooperative providing solar and electrification services in southwestern Wisconsin. In addition to solar panels, Ethos Green Power offers battery storage and EV charging. More information at www.ethos.green.
Good evening. You are listening to WDRT Viroqua.
Perhaps especially in North America, defining one's personal identity is a major life concern. Today on Wings, you'll hear from two millennial women in Canada who identify as witches. They talk about that in relation to family histories and contemporary expression.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings.
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
Robin Erickson of Campus Community Radio CJSF interviewed two witches for the program Intravenous and shared with Wings. Both guests were featured in a 2023 Canadian documentary titled Coven, available free on CBC Gem. Here's sound from the film.
Giving women power is a thing where it's just like cultures don't want to do it. Praying for me is a spell. Burning candles in the church is a spell. They just don't call it that. And it's men at the helm, so it's like, it's okay because they're doing it. But if it was a woman, it would be a completely different thing.
The term witch has really gone through a transformation, whereas before it could be a death sentence if you were called that. There has been a movement to reclaim it as something to be proud of.
Here's Robin Erickson interviewing Laura Hogstad and Andra Zlatescu.
I want to ask you both individually, what brought you to the craft and how would you personally describe witchcraft?
For me, it was definitely being raised with my grandmother and also my father's stories. And a lot of them were folklore, a lot of them were fairy tales, but at the root of them was this worldview that everything is sacred, everything is alive, magic is everywhere. So I had the luck and honor and privilege to never have to be raised out of those beliefs. I never had to dissociate from that magical way of thinking and then come back to it and reestablish it. It's always been a part of me.
Andra is a Romanian musician, performer, illustrator, and tarot reader, passionate about creation that serves to act as a spell to open the doorways, honoring the land, their ancestors, and traditions. She plays and sings saw and guitar in the band Willow Switch and loves to create haunting, ethereal folk music. Laura Hogstad is a queer Toronto-based art director, tarot card reader, and the host of the YouTube series on Rue Morgue TV called Terror Tarot, where she analyzes the use of tarot cards in horror films. Laura has always had a strong interest in the occult and magic. And through the use of tarot cards and her solitary practice, Laura searches for a deeper understanding of herself and those around her.
When I was younger and exploring kind of witchcraft on my own, I was just following my instincts. And then later I was like, oh, maybe what I'm doing is part of this practice. And it's something bigger than just me like running around in the forest, collecting things and doing these little rituals that I didn't even really know I was creating. So I've always felt like witchcraft for me was very like introspective because I was mostly a solitary practitioner. But as I've explored my practice more, it's felt quite a bit more empowering and transgressive almost.
What does witchcraft offer us in our understanding of gender and gender roles and the binary of masculine and feminine?
In the 1960s, when Wicca was becoming really prevalent, and a lot of these more ceremonial magical systems were becoming really popular and within the social cultural gaze, binary masculine and feminine roles within magic were such a part of those traditions. And so as a non-binary person, approaching those traditions and entering in dialogue with them, you know, or as a queer person, or as someone who carries many different worlds within them and holds them all equally real, equally true, wants them all to have the space to exist and manifest in the world, that becomes a more difficult conversation, because I think witchcraft will always also represent kind of the values and the worldview of the people practicing it. So we enter into that dialogue with the older views of like the elders within that community. And also it's our role to challenge those things. And in that way, witchcraft grows with us. But a lot of those limiting beliefs exist everywhere. Even if our mind doesn't believe them, sometimes we carry them within our body and within ourselves and within our worldview and how we approach these alternate spaces or magical discussions or different ways of being. And so continuing to challenge that, I feel, is part of what makes witchcraft really powerful, because it's always been tied to non-normative identities. But I feel like each generation creates space for what would have before been considered non-normative. And so we have to keep pushing against that and pushing against it.
I definitely agree. I think modern witchcraft kind of manifests taking a step out of this like patriarchal mindset or rules or expectations, because it seeks to like empower individuals in their self-expression. But I definitely agree there are traditions and ways of being within witchcraft that have to be questioned and dismantled, like you so eloquently said.
Part of women's power is claiming our capacity to create. But in order to create, we have to carry that duality of destroying what is not serving us in order to have the space for manifesting the world that we dream of. And within our sphere of influence, whether that's a couple of people or a whole community, each of us has the capacity to create the world as we want to see it everywhere, to treat people the way we think everybody should be treating each other, you know, like utopias, really. And I feel like creating those worlds around us makes them inhabitable. And that's actually how we change the future and exercise our magic and exercise our power, because maybe your sphere of influence starts at really, really small. And it's just you and your cat, and you treat your cat with integrity and you treat your cat with grace and you make sure that cat is loved and fed. But I think you start to build those relationships of like alignment with your mind, body, your spirit, your integrity, and then your sphere of influence starts to grow and it starts to grow and it starts to grow. And that's what it means to claim our power.
That's such a nice segue into this next question that I have. There was an article by Anne Theriault called The Real Reason Women Love Witches, which was published in Medium. And she says, sort of tongue in cheek, it's not about broomsticks or cats, it's about power. And you started to talk about this, Andra, but Laura, what does the power look like to you?
I do kind of agree. It is a little bit about cats, just because I have two and I love them. But at the beginning of the article, Anne talks about this girlhood experience I related to. It was going to sleepovers and having this group of young girls together practicing different types of divination, you know, in a childish way, maybe doing like a seance or trying to talk through a Ouija board, all of these like sleepover kind of cliches. But I really think young girls and young children or young people are drawn to witches as a source of power, because it's this group of people who really don't feel very empowered at that stage of life. And you're searching for that power and control. And I feel like that kind of follows you into adulthood, at least for myself. I definitely find that ongoing search for personal empowerment through my practice.
I do think it's stepping into your power and not being afraid of what we would consider the more dangerous aspects of power, like anger, for example. Like anger can burn things down. Anger can be a boundary setter. Anger can be a protector. So I think part of witchcraft is learning to claim all aspects of your power, to be comfortable with your shadow aspects, to hold all of those worlds as true and equal, and to ground yourself in all of them. And I see this modern trend that I think we have to be really careful of, you know, which witchcraft is really popular right now. And it's really popular right now also as a form of like edgy consumerism. And what ends up happening is, you know, this movement that's really meant to empower, especially, you know, like you said, Laura, like often young, insecure women at an age where they're learning who they are, can be just as disempowering when what it's doing is saying, you know, I'll sell you a spell or I'll sell you a candle that will like solve your anxiety or solve your depression or like, you know, fix the problems in your life. Because the problem with a lot of traditional religion is it adds an intermediary between you and your truth. And so the only teachers you should follow are the ones that bring you back to your heart. And it's not about buying the right stuff or buying the right tools or looking the right way. We used to live in a world, you know, there's also separation between witchcraft and like animism. Like many of us used to live in a world where everything was sacred. You know, magic was everywhere. We all honor the land and held those relationships really, really strong within us. And there's absolutely no reason, I feel, to not walk those paths now and to not have those direct experiences with the sacred and what we would consider magic, what we would consider miracles. And so being really, really careful of what intermediaries we put between ourselves and the experience of the sacred. As a tarot reader too, like one of the things I'm always trying to remind people is, you know, you carry your truth with you. If I tell you anything that doesn't resonate with you at all, don't listen to me, because ultimately the only reason I'm able to read these truths is because that person walked through my door already deep somewhere in their spirit, already knowing those things and seeking their own healing and seeking their own growth. Even when you're given those opportunities or you're given power in their life where you can tell them if something's right or wrong, holding that as a deeply ethical thing, always bringing it back to their power and their truth and what feels right to them.
I also read tarot, and I say it's similar things to anyone who comes through for reading. It's like, whatever resonates with you, take that. And I also say, like, tarot isn't going to predict the future or give you lottery numbers or, you know, all these things that people think it will. But what it will do is like help you kind of shine light onto, like you said, Andra, to your own truth and what you kind of already know. It just helps guide you, maybe if you're unsure of that path, but you've got it in here.
On Wings, you're listening to interviews with two women who live in Canada and have found their personal identity as witches. Both of them make use of tarot card readings. Laura Hochstad found a niche in media analyzing and criticizing the use of tarot cards in horror films. Here's a short clip from her debut performance in the podcast series Terror Tarot.
My name's Laura Hochstad. I am an intern here at Rue Morgue Magazine, and I'm also a tarot card reader. I'm a big fan of horror movies, and so I thought today let's look at some tarot moments in some of my favorite horror films. Welcome to Terror Tarot on Rue Morgue TV. Today we're going to be talking about the movie Dr. Terror's House of Horror. Since this is our first episode, I thought I'd do a little intro on what tarot is. Tarot was originated in the 14th or 15th century, but its true origins are shrouded in mystery. It did not become associated with the occult until the 18th century. The deck that we're going to be using today to look at the film with is Smith & Waite tarot deck. This one's based on the traditional Rider-Waite tarot deck, but it is a little bit different. The first card is the Fool. It does indicate the beginning of a journey. So in that sense, I do find that Dr. Terror is using the card in its correct imagery. The next card is the Magician. And this one typically in tarot indicates that you are in charge of your own journey in your own life and all the tools you need are in front of you. But what we also see in the imagery of these cards is there's lots of plant life around, especially in the Hanged Man as well. And we see in the Sun card, there's a lot of plant growth in the background. And I believe that's a bit of foreshadowing because upon arrival, him and his wife notice that there's a lot of weeds have grown up over the house. And when Bill tries to cut them down, the shears fly out of his hand. And what we find out is that this plant is a killer plant and it's coming to take over Bill's house to kill him, his wife, and anyone who comes to visit. I find if I were to give it a pass or fail, this reading fails.
As of March 2024, there are 13 videos in Laura's Terror Tarot series, viewable on YouTube. Now back to Robin Erickson's interview with the two millennial witches.
Erica Feldman is the proprietor of House Witch, which is a shop in Salem, Massachusetts. And she says that for her, the initials witch stand for woman in total control of herself.
It's a funny acronym. And for Erica, as a business owner making this huge empire of House Witch, that acronym definitely resonates. I think I heard her say in an interview too that just even taking back the word witch is kind of like a radical feminist act. And I definitely feel that way as well. But personally, I don't know if it was self-control that I was really searching for in my journey anyway. It was more like self-acceptance and finding that power within.
Yeah, the idea of control over yourself or over things around you is often this very top-down power, right? It's your mind over matter, your logic often over your emotions or your intuition. And I think it's also part of this really almost like capitalist worldview of each person as this individual subject, you know, separate from community, separate from the land, separate from the bigger waves of energy or experience that a lot of us tend to share. And I think trying to control things is often a fear-based response. And the harder thing is accepting and allowing yourself to be a part of all of these beautiful relationships that we find ourselves in.
The beautiful thing about witchcraft as a whole is that there's so many different avenues that you can go down looking for mentors and finding community and a connectedness.
Yeah, and the only teachers you should follow are the ones that guide you back to your heart.
What has been your experience of the process of stepping into this self-identification?
The most resistance I actually have ever gotten is from my own family. They have a very traditional worldview of a lot of these things and a lot of negative associations. I've been moving through my life and through the world as a witch and identifying in that way for a long time, but I tend to not invite people into those vulnerable aspects of myself unless I know that they can honor them. You know, my mother told me I'm not a witch and what am I doing? And then after being invited into those spaces, I think she understood better what witchcraft means and was actually really proud of me. And it was really sweet that she gained a broader understanding of that. But I think it was difficult to navigate.
It was almost easier for me to tell people I was a witch than to come out as gay. My family and friends jokingly referred to me as a witch. And when I was in high school, there was a rumor that went around that I was a witch and a lesbian. And it turned out that both were true. I hate that the bullies were right. But it was almost like when I started to really own my identity as a witch, it was almost like a little bit of a soft launch of my queer identity. It's like, okay, so I'll say I'm a witch. And who accepts me for that? Who is okay with it? And okay, well, now maybe I can take that next step and reveal another part of who I am.
My family has informed my belief system and my practice, but it's one of those things where the moment you speak it, it becomes dangerous. And in the case of my family, they were revolutionaries against the oppressive communist regime in Romania. So they were raised that the way you keep yourself safe is you don't speak your opinion, you don't speak your truth, you hide, you try to be like everybody else. So you may carry these beliefs, but the fact that I'm speaking them, I think brings up a lot of that in them. A lot of those beliefs around like the best way to protect our children and keep them safe is to make sure that they're also hiding in those ways so they're not in danger. But I keep myself safe by not holding things inside my body and learning to speak my truth so that it doesn't burn me up.
Laura, I'm curious about your perspective on this because there's ancestral history for you there. You discovered that you're related to a couple of witches who have been hung and that we carry this cellular ancestral somatic knowing about things.
Yeah, absolutely. That was like a shock to the system when we discovered that I not only had one ancestor in Salem who was persecuted as a witch, but then to find out also if I trace my family back in Scotland that that same thing had happened. It was shocking. It made me angry because when we think about the witch trials that were going on all over Europe and America, you know, between 14 to 1700s. I think I read somewhere that it was like 40 to 50,000 people during that time were killed for that. You do carry that with you. I think you carry your ancestors' energies and their memories are kind of like a ripple in your mind. I had a profound experience of doing a past life regression where I didn't even expect, I didn't know what was going to happen, but then to really feel like I tapped into those feelings of the ancestors and how they were feeling at that time. It was really profound and sad and scary, but also kind of, you know, there was a part where it's like, okay, so I've always been feeling this way, to trace that lineage back, to feel like, okay, so that it's for a reason, you know, there's something there that really made me connect to it. Cause I was always, I think we're our harshest critic. I was like, oh, I don't have any space in this world. I don't deserve to be here. I'm not, you know, what I imagined I should be to be able to say that I'm a witch, but that part, as hard as it was a bit validating, I guess, in a sad way, I guess.
Similar to what Laura was saying, that we carry our own truth and we carry our knowledge and we carry our ancestry and it lives in our bodies. So even if we're not within our mind, logically, rationally aware of where those messages or feelings come from, so often your instinct remembers. And biologically, we're made of our ancestors. Ancestral memory is part of what informs us. And so we have access to this knowledge, even if our head may not know it. We're still responding from not just our environment that formed us, but things much, much older than that. I keep saying this, but the only teachers that should guide you are the ones that bring you back to your own truth. I went to Romania and I met this beautiful family of witches. They practice traditionally. They're actually the only Romani clan where the women are the ones who work predominantly, and they work as witches, and they work in witchcraft, and they do rituals, they do spells, they do palm readings, you know, blessings, curses, all of that. And they don't actually believe that there is good or bad magic. They believe that you should be able to do all of it, but then you can choose what you do. You know, you decide your path by making those choices of what you're willing to practice and not practice when other people come and make those asks for you. And so to be really unexpectedly actually initiated into their coven and brought into working with them and to get to see and experience a lot of these things firsthand, I think what it also really taught me is that, you know, I'm my own worst critic. I'm the one with the biggest imposter syndrome, and the people like outside of me don't see that. And even after they were all like so validating and they were so like, oh no, you're here because you're supposed to be here, because it's ancestral, because clearly the universe brought you here. You know, I'm the one who's like still carrying all of these doubts and feelings. And so going back to like in the tarot, you know, there's the devil card, and the devil is hell is our own creation, and we're responsible for the chains that bind us. You know, you can like go to the ends of the world and have like other people like sing your praises or validate you or like include you in the heart of their community and like meet you with trust and welcoming and these beautiful things. And you can still like carry those same old beliefs around yourself. And so, you know, the alchemical change, the witchcraft, the magic and all of that is like actually slowly, slowly like growing and healing those belief systems we carry within us that limit our own power and our own capacity to like share our gifts with the world and with our communities in reciprocity of honoring other people's gifts and becoming stronger in that way.
I completely agree, especially when we talk about this like imposter syndrome. For me, when I got to go through and do that ceremony with one of the high priestesses, it was an overwhelming experience. It was not anything I ever expected to do, but it was really, it was wonderful to see how they do their practice. And then, you know, to be able to meet other practitioners and to be able to connect with like Andra as well and talk about that it doesn't have to be this one specific way of practicing was really helpful for me. To know, you know, the way that I've felt connected to nature and the way that I've practiced, there are other folks who do it that way as well. So that was just validating. And then again, going back to finding this heritage within my family of people who had been accused of witchcraft, it was just, it was a connectedness to the past and to my practice. And it just like brought everything kind of all together and made me feel a lot more confident in holding that identity in that space.
So much of what we think about ourselves and the past is deeply rooted in white male cisgendered myth and white supremacy. How do you see the ways that witchcraft seeks to interrupt this and reframe outdated notions of who we are and who we can be?
Just if we think, just going back to the witch trials as well, and how that basically stems from men's fear of women in power and wanting to control women. Honestly, the people who were accused of witchcraft during all that time were healers. They were leaders in their community. They were women who possibly spoke up. Or what I learn is a woman may have had property that a man wanted. So I think it's just like that lobbing of that word and using it in this way. You know, I feel like men throughout history have done that to try and disempower women. There's something that they fear there. And I think it is women coming together, being in their power and just, you know, existing in this way. So I think that witchcraft in itself is trying to disrupt that kind of patriarchal view of who's in power and who isn't.
And I feel like, you know, like a lot of spiritual traditions and even modern spiritual traditions, and also like the media too, it's a lot of escapism. It's a lot of, you know, transcending your present moment, like leaving your body, you know. And for me, it was always like, well, I don't need help dissociating. I do that really easily. You know, I want my spiritual practice to be something that helps bring me into my bones and bring me into the present. For me, it's also recognizing how deeply my body is rooted in relationship to the land. The less you are dependent on other people. You know, you can be part of community, you can share of your gifts, but you are whole and complete unto yourself. You know, you don't need like a man or whatever to validate your existence. And I think that's also why witchcraft is so threatening.
And it's like, going back to the accusations that were thrown at women too, I was reading that, you know, if you're an old woman and you're unmarried, oh, then you could get this accusation of witchcraft. And but at the same time, if you were a young girl who was attractive and, like, you know, the man felt like you were casting a spell on them, you know, it's just like all these things that, you know, it was at that time, the result would be hanging in this accusation of witchcraft. But very much so, those ideas are still there today. It's like, oh, an unmarried older woman is, you know, just thrown away kind of in the way that society, especially patriarchal society, regards them, and young women as well, seen as this like temptress, when it's like, no, maybe they're just existing and you guys just need to stop being so creepy about it.
That was Robin Erickson's interview with Laura Hochstad and Andres Latescu. Laura Hochstad hosts a series called Terror Tarot on YouTube. Andres Latescu is a musician who plays guitar and saw and sings in the two-person band Willow Switch. Wings purchased from Bandcamp the Willow Switch song Baba Yaga, in which Andra sings about the fabled Slavic witch whose house walked about on chicken's legs and who was rumored to eat children. Here's an excerpt. Wings thanks Robin Erickson, CJSF Radio, and the program Intravenous for the interview with Canadian witches Laura Hochstad and Andres Latescu. You can see them both in the documentary Coven on CBC's video service Gem. Thanks also to All Wings supporters, including your community radio stations, Suzette Cullen and Genevieve Vaughn, whose events can be found through the website maternalgifteconomymovement.org. That's all one word, maternalgifteconomymovement.org. The Wings sound logo is from Libana's album A Circle Is Cast. I'm Wings series producer Frieda Worden. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.
You are listening to WDRT Viroqua. Yeah!
Welcome to Talk World Radio, a half-hour discussion of politics as if the people mattered. I'm David Swanson. This week on Talk World Radio, we are welcoming back Colleen Rowley, former FBI agent and whistleblower, and back in 2002, one of the Time Magazine People of the Year for whistleblowing. Long-time, wonderful peace advocate, justice advocate, activist of all sorts, and participant in the upcoming flotilla to Gaza to bring aid to the people of Gaza. Colleen Rowley, welcome to Talk World Radio.
Well, thank you for having me.
So we had Anne Wright on about this upcoming flotilla. So many wonderful and courageous people are going. Why did you decide to go, and what are you expecting at this point?
Well, I don't think there's any other alternative to really trying harder. I've been telling people, you know, as much as we've been doing all these years, and, you know, when you contacted me, I said, boy, have we been at this a long time. I sent you the photo of all of the banners we lined up across our footbridges going, that was in 2007, 2008. I look in my garage and I still got from, you know, almost 20 years ago, things that I've saved. So it's been a long time, and the situation just seems to get worse and more dangerous, especially traumatic even for people to be watching a genocide unfolding. You know, we read about those things in history books and, you know, of course, the Nazi Holocaust and Pol Pot and the Armenian genocide. I didn't think we would actually end up having to really witness and watch it in live time like this. And, you know, one of the reasons I said yes right away is in the first few months, even I started seeing the faces of my own children and grandchildren in the faces of the poor Gazans, children, babies and children being murdered, orphaned, starved. I mean, I can't watch those things. You know, I know, one of our colleagues, Craig Murray, said, you know, he used to just cry watching him. And he goes, what's happening to me after 6 months? I've almost kind of stopped crying because I'm becoming desensitized to the killing of children. I mean, it's hard to even understand this. So anyways, 2 weeks after October 8th, I painted banners and did the same thing. We went up on a footbridge, stop the genocide.